Blog Talk
Welcome
Radio.
To... We're going to have a hot show tonight. Tonight's show is pretty complicated to a certain extent, but it kind of does confirm the theory that there are a small group of people running the world. The Guardian's Carol Cadwalladr, who has won numerous journalism awards, investigated Cambridge Analytica and their role in the Brexit. She also found connections to Breitbart News, Steve Bannon, and Russian Five. I'll get into that. So the way you say her name is Cadwalladr. There's too many consonants and not enough vowels. So she found connections between American news agencies that were secondary to mainstream, Russia, and other key people that were influential in Brexit. Breitbart News also had a hand in trying to influence conservative voters into a definitive decision over the exiting of the EU. He was present in England as early as 2012, and he tried to hook this influential socialite named Nigel Farage into influencing the European population, who, by the way, used to be a tree hugging, liberal, caring left-winger. Robert Mercer, who I'm sure you've heard the name of, is a billionaire hedge fund owner. He was the primary financial supporter of the Trump campaign. He also owns Cambridge Analytica, who breached the privacy data for thousands of Britons. Mark Zuckerberg was set to stand trial in England, but he never showed up. But he sure got a lot of heat in the U.S. Bannon was the vice president, incidentally, of Cambridge Analytica. Trump invited that shoddy Englishman, Nigel Farage, on stage in Mississippi in the summer of 2016 at the height of his campaign, saying, "If Brexit can happen in Britain, I can get elected here." Robert Mercer was the primary donor for the entire Trump campaign. And just keep that in mind, because he owned Cambridge Analytica, and he also had close ties to Bannon, who influenced Farage. Cambridge Analytica also gave money to Lukoil in Russia and promoted seminars like Manipulating Foreign Elections. And that's exactly how they titled the seminars. I know Don and Wade are on the line. Please bear with me 1 second while I play a two to three minute clip from National Public Radio. I appreciate it.
I met this I describe as cool, calm, collected, Elizabeth Denham. She's the Information Commissioner in Britain, which is a job title and a post which just does not exist in America, because you do not have any data protection laws, which is this kind of incredible thing. But we have data protection laws, and they recently got strengthened. And the ICO, the Information Commissioner's Office, is the government regulator that protects that. And what happened is that after my very first article on Cambridge Analytica, which was in February last year, so before I started talking to Chris, the first one was about Robert Mercer and Cambridge Analytica and the Facebook data, etc., that kicked off two investigations in Britain, and one was by our Electoral Commission into the work that Cambridge Analytica may or may not have done in the Brexit referendum, and one was by the Information Commission Office about what they did with data. And that then became part of a wider inquiry into the use of data in politics. And that investigation, so it's been going on now for 20 months, and it stepped up when Chris Wylie started talking to them and we started giving them documents. And they've now got 40 full-time investigators. And we discovered last week that they're working very closely with the FBI. And this is sort of fascinating, because the piece I did last week was about this convergence you can see in some of the things that Mueller is looking at and some of the things that the ICO is looking at. And this thing of the data of how Americans were targeted and what they were targeted with and what the Russians were doing with fake news and what the Trump campaign was doing with fake news, essentially, with propaganda, and whether there's any overlap between those things is a sort of key part of Mueller's investigation. So what happened in that very dramatic week of when after Chris Wylie came forward and went on the record with us and with the New York Times is the ICO went into Cambridge Analytica's office. They got a warrant. Again, this is something which could never have happened in America. It's only this thing of the fact that their head offices were in Britain and that they were processing US voters' data in Britain that has enabled this to happen. But they were able to go in on the basis of evidence that Christopher Wylie and I and other whistleblowers had given them, and go in and seize computer. This is what they've been going through, to sort of do this very, very forensic investigation of looking at the data. And so the thing that they told me, which we published on Sunday, was that they had discovered that Cambridge Analytica's servers had been accessed in Russia, or from Russian IP addresses, Russian and other Commonwealth independent states, they described it. And then earlier this week, CNN ran a story which had a slightly extra detail to that, of saying that this was the Facebook data.
Can you just say a little bit more about the Russian connection in the Facebook data?
So there's all sorts of weird Russian connections, and they're still unraveling, and we're still not sure.
I'm going to cut it off now. We have live hosts, and I don't want to take too much private property from the NPR. Just that segment alone was just talking about how there was IP servers in Russia connecting to Cambridge Analytica data through Facebook, And then she goes on to say that lukoil in Russia had promoted seminars about manipulating election. With that, I'll bring Don in first and then Wade, who are, they both called in within 2 minutes of each other. Hello, Don. Don Gallimore, or to Gallimore. Don Gallimore, you must be in the biffy. I'm going to go to Wade next. Hi, Wade.
Hey, I get bumped up to number one.
Hi, Wade.
Oh, there he is. All right.
I hope somebody's listening.
Yeah, my phone is...
As long as Don doesn't give a standard answer, it's all bullshit. I'll be willing to hear whatever y'all have to say. What's the deal, Don, with your phone?
My phone was messing up. I was listening to that long clip of a whole lot of bullshit, and it kind of got my ear sweaty, so it got to the phone,
Very funny.
Sort of... What? Funny? No.
Well, that's okay. That was Carol Cadwalladr's voice, the journalist who found all these connections. Okay, needless to say, Don, can you step out of the toddler room and go into the adult room for the show?
Yeah.
Okay, Wade, what did you think of all the stuff I just read and played?
Oh, that what she said, and sorry, it's a little hard to follow over the phone, but I'm still trying to get straight answers about what the whole Russian involvement was. It's a little, I've been trying to research and figure out what people are saying about it. It's been a little hard. People said, look at the indictments, and I can't make much out. Like, I'm trying to find out what exactly people, the Russians, were doing.
Well,
and
yeah,
I'm getting,
I'll relieve you a little bit. I did put Don on hold for 40 seconds until he gets to a quieter room. The show isn't about how Russia was involved. It's how Steve Bannon moved Breitbart News over to England in 2012, even before Trump ran. It's a paradox of how Breitbart News and American News Information Service try to influence England's strategy on exiting the EU, and yet people are complaining about Russia trying to influence our American election. And
I believe
both parties can only do so to a certain extent because some voters have their mind made up. Now, maybe they influence groups like labor unions or churches, but as individuals, I think a lot of people kind of set their value system in accordance with whoever is running. Don, you're back in the house. Go ahead, Wade or Don.
Okay.
I think everybody's going to try to influence the world according to their values. And, I mean, definitely it happens on the left, too. You know, both people are trying to, you know, get people to see the world the way they see it.
Right, and, like, a lot of the way Breitbart did it is only through pop-up ads on Facebook. So let's say you're just looking down your homepage where different friends post different things. Not that many people glance over to the right side of the screen unless they might see something for low-interest mortgages or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But how many people actually click on, like in England, they were trying to put in pro-Brexit advertisements and anti-stay with the EU. So the question is, what percentage of those population was actually definitely influenced by ads on Facebook and through other social media by Cambridge Analytica? And by the way, Mark Zuckerberg did get heavily fined for that. I don't know how much, but it was enough. Probably strip his pockets a little bit. Don,
do
you have
a
comment?
Question. You should go ahead.
Don!
All right.
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
You can call back in if your phone's goofing up.
No, I've got it ready. But, I mean, the Breitbart situation, you know, with WikiLeaks, that was probably commissioned for something or other. Zuckerberg has had his hand in most of the intel from social media, be along with Bill Gates, and neither one of them I would trust, you know, walk across the street. And
my question, that brings up something, Don. So Don and Wade, who's pulling the strings of our society? Is there a small group of rich people running the whole show?
Sometimes it seems like
well,
it.
Well, you know, it's the Masons, it's the, you know, so-called Illuminati, it's the Rockefellers, Mellon's Trilateral Commission, all of those things are running the world. Now, in terms of the individual donations people can make to whatever they can work at as their cause, makes their world a little better. But in terms of the world, the money is the object. Nobody is insured of any money, any profit from work. Our labor is worth much more than we're being paid for. And, you know, Breitbart and Steve Bannon and Donald Trump, you know, they're laughing. They know that. They know they've got the purse strings. Milton's got a lot of the purse, you know, like you said, he interviewed Jerry.
Well, the only reason Bannon was hired as an advisor for Trump is because he was technically Robert Mercer, the hedge fund billionaire's employee for Cambridge Analytica. It was Mercer who probably talked Trump into taking Bannon on. Bannon knows a lot more about historical philosophy than Trump. Trump just sees things black and white in the way he wants things.
Well, Bannon, again, he has some blackmailable material on Trump, too. So there are a lot of people, the Russian oligarchs, of course, Putin, they've got a lot of dirt on Donald Trump. And he is doing his best to pay them back by implementing these things like the tax reform and other things. He's very, very happy about net neutrality, even though he publicly says he's not. This is a really a tenuous time that everybody has to be vigilant, has to be active in their communities in order basically to keep their communities. These folks are draining the economic swamp of everybody's money, slowly but surely. And, you know, people, they can't afford to live anymore. This is Breitbart, you know, Steve Bannon, smart enough to know that. I think he made some kind of a quote that that said that people didn't necessarily deserve their profit, their money or profits or whatever.
Yeah, I want to, Don, I want to ask Wade something. Wade, that movie you saw, was it a spoof on Brexit or was it a realistic movie?
Oh, it was kind of an interesting philosophical point I was making. It was the history of Queen Elizabeth I in the 1500s. And so just, you know, I was just kind of subversively making the point that, you know, back 500 years ago, you had the old EU, the Roman Empire, the Catholic Holy Roman Empire, and
was very connected. The government and religion was connected.
Yeah, and you know, the movie, which is a fantastic movie, I gave you guys the trailer. It was Queen Elizabeth, the Golden Age, which was like the second movie that they made about Queen Elizabeth, and it deals with her confrontation with the Spanish Armada, which was.
I love that
really
movie and I own
power
it.
At the time. And that, that was a great movie. So I was relating that to her. That was her Brexit, the movie about, that was what it was about. So, I like seeing people have independence and freedom. And I think the more individuals and regular small people have power, the better.
Yeah, I have a question for both of you. Aside from Breitbart influencing the country and Nigel Farage, who I don't know that much about, I want to tell you something and then ask you guys a question. I watched a couple independent videos on YouTube tonight. This gay guy left England for Alaska. He said that one reason England wanted to exit the EU is because they wanted a detachment from Muslim immigration, like having a ton of Muslims coming in, because they didn't think Muslims were adapting and abiding by the laws and customs of England. And then he also mentioned that Sweden, the rapes in Sweden have increased astronomically after they took in a ton of Muslim refugees, because the men will just go and rape the women. And in Sweden, they're not allowed to write the nationality of the rapist on the police report. So how much of that hype do you think is really real versus what England just wanting autonomy over their finances? Either one of you can answer.
Yeah, that's a hard one. I've read a lot about that, and it just is like, it's really hard to know the truth, because it just depends on whose perspective. My belief is that I would be pretty sure the vast majority of Muslims they're bringing in are decent people. I don't believe the normal average Muslim coming in is criminal. Here's the thing with immigration. If people are fleeing a place, then people aren't fleeing because of the dinosaurs. They're fleeing because of other people. So when you have people fleeing a place, you got to figure, okay, well, there's other people from over there that they're fleeing from. I can imagine that if they're not selective, that there's going to be some of that element coming in, because there's obviously something that people are trying to get away from over there.
The only thing that I can't really make out with England is, despite their willfulness to always be like kind of separate and not wanting to give up the pound, how much do they really have to gain from being separate from the EU? And why is Donald Trump so adamant about breaking up the EU? Don, do you know?
Yep. Oh, absolutely. This has to go back to the formation of the EU. Everybody had their own currency, and they were not able. They were doing fine, actually, but they were not able to access currency in the area a little more than half the size of the United States. So we're talking about a very small space where a lot of people live. And the desire to go to the EU was one of my most woeful days when I found out about it. When I heard it coming through other areas,
you were upset that England left?
No. I'm glad England left. England is a smart country, and they know when a currency is going to keep them down. Now they have the opportunity to develop independently and can deal with
anybody
in the world.
But what if somebody doesn't want to deal with them? Because what if certain European countries hold it against them because they went solo?
So England says, so what? England used to colonize half the world. England doesn't give a shit. So
that's true.
Good point.
They don't give a shit. So the bottom line is that they're going to do what they want to do. the Queen doesn't even have necessarily a say, even though Wade, you know, when you mentioned this Queen Elizabeth in the show, you know, whatever.
It's a constitutional monarchy. The legislature and the royal palace both make decisions equally.
Right, they're my pet. Okay, the dollar bond is at the worst idea.
Okay, go ahead. Finish your thought. Sorry.
No, it was one of the worst ideas then, and there are other countries that really did not belong in the EU because their debt ratios were so poor or so bad, and they had no real industry. Nothing that was going to grow their GDP, that they had no reason, including, I believe it was 26 countries, probably a third of those countries in the EU. Those countries forced themselves into it to bolster their economies. So in terms of Brexit, everybody's going to be chasing the Europeans, the English, once they stabilize. That's the question, because of the instability of the rest of the world, it's disjointed their parliament. It's done a lot of things to their economic potentialities, and there are countries that. They've got the same problem that we do in terms of rising housing rates. So they're really in a predicament, or Piccadilly, or whatever you want to call it, because they're experiencing growing pains, and they don't have the room nor the, again, skilled labor force to take on some of the newfangled things that are coming on the United States and China and Japan have already undertaken. So England is.
I wanted to bring up a point.
Well, I wanted to mention the Muslims. I wanted to bring up the Muslims.
Not right this second. When you're done, I want to bring up the top five contributors to the EU. There's 28 nations. Go ahead, finish your thought.
All right. Well, no, the Muslim situation is really bad. And when I say bad, I'm not saying not taking sides or anything like that. Wade is right on point when he says that when people are fleeing a particular area, they're doing it for a reason. Yeah, like that, there's not because of dinosaurs, but they're fleeing because of the Boko Haram, the ISIS. All of them are already in most of these Muslim places, and they even scare the Muslim people. The ones that Wade claims are mostly good people. You'll have to quantify what mostly is, and because there is a large contingent that, even though they don't ascribe to ISIS or any other terrorist group, they do have those. Born and raised in Al-Qaeda and everything else that has been preached over there. So they're coming to a country with their, again, another word, potential criminality. What is criminality? For them, of course, killing a wife over a certain aspect is no problem. And you bring that culture into a culture that has relatively strict law enforcement, you're going to definitely have a problem. And obviously Sweden has no police presence or not enough of a police presence to handle their criminality.
They have had a significant number of Muslims also convert to Christianity. I'm just going to interrupt you for a second because I want everyone to have an even chance to talk. You can, there's 28 countries in the EU. I'm going to read it up in a second. Germany has the highest GDP of 3 million of US dollars. France is second. I mean, England was second with 2.9. France was third. Spain was up there at 1.4 million. Italy was up there in the 1.45. And then the GDP per capita, Germany has the highest with 50,000 per person. The Czech Republic, believe it or not, has a 49. So anyways, as we know and we've learned in the past, when Greece wanted to join, a lot of them that don't carry their weight. And I'm just going to run through the country super fast. I'm not going to elaborate. I'm going to give you guys the floor back. And by the way, England was one of the longest members. They joined in 73, back when it was the EEC or something like that. So it's Austria, Belgium, Bulgaria, Croatia, Cyprus, Czech Republic, Denmark, Estonia, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Hungary, Ireland, Italy, Latvia, Lithuania, Luxembourg, Malta, Netherlands, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Slovakia, Slovenia, Spain, Sweden, and United Kingdom. I heard something funny on Stephen Colbert the other day, that when Donald Trump was talking about European countries, he thought that Ireland was in the UK, and it's not. But I'm giving Waiter Don the floor now. Go ahead, guys.
Go ahead, wait.
Well, I think Don, brought up good points. And I'm just saying, I don't really know for sure what the situation is. But, if you have two countries that are run very differently and that are very different cultures, and you try to bring too much of the population of one into another, there's going to be cultural clashes, and people are going to want to turn the one country into what they're used to. So I can see concerns, and in my experience, most people are decent people, so I'm going off of that. But I don't honestly know what they're dealing with over there. But I would listen to people, and I would listen to their concerns, and I think England should be free to make their choice and decide what's best for themselves.
Yeah, and I was also going to mention that Norway is not a member, and neither are several of the Yugoslav countries like Serbia and Montenegro. But Romania and Bulgaria and Greece kind of hover over them on the map. And Switzerland is neutral because they're part of the UN and stuff. So, I agree. I did want to bring up a historical point that Wade mentioned. It's kind of interesting when you think about the Holy Roman Empire and how much it influenced Europe, and a lot of the marriages were made, like Spain and England had a joint marriage that King Henry VIII was originally married to someone from Spain before he married the second wife, Catherine, who he ended up hanging. And a lot of those alliances, like with Russia, Austria, and France, and all those triple alliances and all that stuff they had in the 1800s, it was called a balance of power. And they would have those alliances for, like 40 to 50 years, and then it would break up, and then they'd realign. But now I do think that Trump is a threat to Europe in the sense that we're the most like-minded government. Like, if he's going to try to alienate Europe and the EU, he's barking up the wrong tree, because whether we see Russia as a real threat or not, England is England, and the rest of Europe is kind of like our brothers. And throwing them down, trashing them, and making bad comments about China and Korea makes us really at risk.
Well, the thing is, though, is that, again, this is a ploy to get the rich people richer. When Donald Trump has an opportunity to get some money back, quote unquote, from whomever, it doesn't have to be, it's not, as you see, exclusive to the EU contingent. This is something where he will have his the ability to get his cronies money back for some of the money that they're spending, we're spending on subsidies, on relief efforts, on anything else that we want to call it. And you know, this is where we can save some of that money. We don't have to spend it all. Again, what I was saying earlier, the Masons, the so-called Trilateral Commission, Rockefeller, all those guys are all in it, and they're only in it for the money. So, you know, if you follow the money, you'll follow what is going on, just like you mentioned earlier with Bannon and Breitbart.
Yeah, I agree. But the ultimate question is no matter how much the rich people get richer, if the world is destabilized, because the Mideast is already in huge trouble, certain segments in North Africa are unstable. In the southern part of the Middle East is unstable. America doesn't want another war. So the rich have to look out for the world's stability if they want continues to be rich.
Well, no, America.
Let's just give the scenario of Halliburton. So what if Cheney and Bush got richer? Now look at Iraq and they're destabilizing. Lebanon, my friend is from Lebanon. They're still pretty stable. But I hear their border clashes on Syria and Israel in the last 2 weeks. I mean, how long can these masochistic dance go on?
Well, you're wrong on the fact that those leaders of America would love another war. That'll eat up all the more profits for oil companies, for Halliburton and the Bushes, and those guys who live life in war. Boeing, Honeywell, GE might even make a comeback. We're talking about some of the outstanding positive opportunities in as many wars as we can do. Now, war, on the other hand, for Americans, is in the same trouble as business is. We don't have enough employees. People are not jumping on the draft or the enlistment bandwagon right now. And we are woefully understaffed in our military. And if anybody sees with any kind of a mind what the military does to its employees, it's sickening. The military is actually out to kill all the militiamen, all their soldiers. And that's why they give them the vaccine.
That's a charming thought.
Oh, yeah, they're giving them all the vaccines and house them in barracks that are completely poisonous and ships. And
are you talking about
bases.
Americans?
Of course. I'm not talking about anybody else. I'm talking about how our American military treats its soldiers. And, you know, they're housed in places that no one would want to be. Their working conditions aboard these ships and submarines and wherever else they're at are deplorable from our own industry standards. You know, asbestos, iron, lead, through pipes, that they don't care. The military doesn't care as long as they have a presence in a place. That's all they care about. But, you know, we wouldn't, again, we need our military because we need our drugs. And we need our sex trafficking. And that's what the military does. So, you know, there's all the things that we need to continue with the military, or else we're going to fall into a probable socialist state. We're going to have to depend on the upper class to support and subsidize a lot of the population.
We don't have to spend all night on this topic, by the way. Wade, you had a topic that you wanted to mention, but do you want to finish this commentary first?
Sure. Yeah, let's finish. Brexit is pretty interesting. And, the research I've done. Oh, here's something. I was trying to do a little research today. Here's an interesting thing that I heard in 2018. Britain paid in $13.1 billion to the EU and received $4.5 billion, which means that it was a net loss of $8.5 billion. So the question is, what are they getting? It cost them $8.5 billion, if the country was just a business, that wouldn't be a good business deal. So I think that would be a good question. It's like, well, what are they getting out of the EU?
Well, the thing is, I heard some of the poorer countries get better distribution of food by joining. I don't know what the richer countries are getting out of it. The only thing I can think of is countries like Germany, who are extremely wealthy and put out very high quality products. They might get more of their cars sold and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing, I was in Europe last year, and it's so much easier dealing with one currency. I jumped around from France and Spain and Italy, and the ease to which I could – let me take that back. There was no ease. It was just a natural progression of currency to distribute. So it was more than ease. It was just how they did business now. But the thing is that I appreciated the fact that you could have that ease of currency distribution. So it has very, very good pluses, but it has hurt, I believe, some of the richer countries the most. And when I say that, mm-hmm. we're talking about Germany. You've seen what has happened, that they've twice had to bail out by themselves Greece. And then had to participate in a third bailout that included Greece and involved Spain and Portugal. So if Germany still had that money, I don't know what they would do with it. Angela Merkel doesn't seem like the kind of person who would put their money, that money in their pocket, like our president or your president, Trump, would. But, this is something that's the purpose. I don't know if that was the purpose for the EU or that's the best purpose for the EU. And in a lot of ways, like us, I would have rather seen us let Enron and AIG and Fannie and Freddie go down, and then work to see instead of the TARPs that we still have so much money sitting in the pipeline that I don't even understand why we haven't had inflation, except for the fact that we've had nobody working in any meaningful industry with positive income. But right now we're at what we call Goldilocks, and it can't get any better than this. So people should be involved, because there's going to be a disruption in the financial and economic and probably political atmosphere, and we're going to have to really tiptoe our way around how we affect it, because we don't have the same capability to print money right now. And again, Brexit's and EU's and the one has been trying to find its footing when the BRIC countries developed their new central bank. So the yuan has been purposely beaten down, if you want to call it, manipulated down in the last 3 months, or 3 years, I'm sorry, because, again, the Glassoff directive that they were going to make a real run at par the dollar. And, so we're talking about extreme situations that are right in our face, right in our face, and we better be prepared to make the right decisions. This trade war is not going to help.
Okay. One last question before we go to the next subject. I only want to do an hour show tonight, maybe an hour 15. Where do you guys see America going in the next 2 years if we don't have a war? Are we going to be able to, somebody's on the line. We have a guest caller. He's been on the line 6 minutes. Let's see who it is.
Okay.
This is Jane with Blog Talk Radio, Political Gravity. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking to?
Yeah, this is Naj. How y'all doing?
Hi, Naj.
Doing great.
Your number came up 1111 tonight. Do you have anything to contribute?
What does that mean?
It means like sometimes the caller ID isn't identifiable, but that's okay. So, Naj, do you have anything to say about, earlier we talked about how this journalist, Carol Cadwallader from England, made connections between billionaire Robert Mercer and Breitbart News, Steve Bannon, who is the vice president of Cambridge Analytics, and the Russian ties, blah, 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 and how Breitbart News influenced England's Brexit decision, as well as Russian ties through Cambridge Analytica about manipulating elections. Well, then we segued into what the condition of the EU is now and what it means for if Britain does leave Brexit. And we've all been adding our opinions for about 30 minutes. Did you gather that from what we were discussing in the last 6 minutes?
Yeah, I did. Well, the thing with Mercer is, man, like, he's not your average billionaire. He's a little, you know, flighty, but he definitely has things that he's concerned with, and he will throw money at him. This is a guy with a million-dollar toy train set running through his home that he can ride throughout his property. Like, that's the kind of money we're talking about. So, yes, he has had a big influence on global politics lately. And, you know, the issue is, you're seeing the same problem all across the world. The problem is the middle and working class people have seen less and less of their profits, lower standard of living. And when you have a situation like that, typically oligarchs, plutocrats, and you know, big time banksters, they find an enemy for you to, you know, vent your anger at. So that's what you saw in Europe. The talk of rape and all this other stuff, just look into it a little more. What you see is, the numbers aren't actually that different than they normally have. You introduce a new population, and then you extrapolate their particular crime and say, oh, there's a crime wave. No, you just brought in a lot of people. Every population is kind of similar in this way. You're going to have a huge swath of people who do, you know, normal working class stuff and do as best they can. You're going to have your criminal element, and you're going to have your deviant element. You know, I mean, that's pretty much every population. But if you are bent on, you know, making hay out of a new population and saying they caused all of this, that, and the third, then, you know, they're easily identifiable. Now, the problem with Brexit became England is getting the best out of the deal here. So when they really started looking at it, they was like, wow, why did we do that referendum? Because they don't want any part of getting rid of leaving the EU. Now, how do they benefit? With the EU, they basically carve up markets and designate them to each country. So these countries get a much bigger market share than they would normally have. And then you, the brother a few minutes ago talked about the access of travel. Well, that same access appears with goods. So the corporations are making way more money than they ever have The working class is hurting because not only are you bringing those products in, but you're also exporting labor in. And you're able to export labor by parts, kind of what we went through in the 90s. So, like right now, the German car manufacturing, a lot of that is done in Eastern Europe, formerly, you know, countries of the USSR. They're doing a lot of the work over there. So what does that mean? Now you can't ever go for a pay raise. Now your union doesn't mean anything because if your union puts up too much of a, you know, argument, then they can just simply ship your job somewhere else. So it's given all of the power really to the top, and the lower classes are in trouble. They're confused. They're angry. Mm-hmm. They're trying to figure out how to solve these problems. But it's very, very difficult. You know, as we know in America, it's very difficult, you know, to deal with this when you're trying to just put food on the table, keep the lights on and all of that. And remember with the EU, Germany is the one who prints the euro. So Germany has different financial circumstances than some of these other countries. So when they're in dire straits and they say, hey, look, you need to print some money to kind of ease the tension here, Germany says, for what? We have great exports. Our exports have the most elasticity in the world. Why do we need? We need to just ride this rough time out. Now, Greece, who was on fire because Germans loaned them the money, and they went and bought BMWs and other nonsense and didn't improve their economy, and, you know, now they're just a tourist wasteland that's being privatized and bought up by the, you know, by the square mile.
Well, let me,
you know,
do you really think Germany prints money when they want to?
Well,
isn't Switzerland
like this.
And
no, this is what
Brussels, Belgium
this is, what
is the headquarters for the EU. Brussels, Belgium
yeah.
is the headquarters for the EU.
Yeah, but
they have
like
a lot of mandates and decisions out of there.
Right. Just hold on. Just hold on. But Germany is the one who has their hands on the printing press for the EU. Why does Germany have their hands on the printing press? Because they're the most stable economy, the biggest economy, and the one that they all look to for financial advice. The problem is, if you have one currency with all of these countries representing it, basically Spain, the countries they call the pigs, Portugal, Spain, Ireland, Greece, they can walk in somewhere with essentially the credit line of Germany. How do you, you know, how do you handle that when a bad credit country walks in with a marker that's similar to Germany to a degree? So that's the problem with the EU. There's really no way they could ever stabilize that. But that's also why the British kept the pound. They didn't fully go in. Britain has a special deal within the EU. They're, you know, they're the special partner, somewhat banking capital of the world, which is kind of why they have that unique situation, and which is why they don't want to leave, but a bunch of their citizens want to leave because their lives have not improved over the course of this. They were promised a lot at the beginning of this, and those promises have trickled up to the 1%. Does this sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, according to some sources, Britain is not fully leaving. They haven't fully left the EU yet.
Right.
Oh no.
And the reason why I'm telling you, that's why
they still have regulations to hurdle before they're fully out of the Brexit. But
okay.
I was saying about the same thing. Only you put in details. So thanks.
Oh yeah, it's all
that
good.
That was good. Yeah.
Yeah, a good economist to
John,
check
you knew quite
the,
more.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. John knew a lot more about it than I thought he did.
Robert Reich.
Yeah,
check out Robert Reich. He's real good on this.
What about
mm-hmm.
him?
I said Robert Reich is really good on this issue. Check him out. He's written extensively about it. Mark Blythe has written about it a lot. It's definitely
yeah.
worth getting into, man, because you see the parallels from here to there. And this is
absolutely.
The other part that nobody ever talks about. Look up the average age of the German citizens. They have a really old population. They've got
okay.
securities and pensions to pay off and, you know, a group of elderly to pay for. And think about elderly people. Elderly people save. They don't spend. How do you stimulate your economy with old people? Well, you bring in immigrants. Now, Merkel will never say that, you know what I mean? But that's a part
mm-hmm.
of the reason. You bring in immigrants, you tax them for 10 generations, they do the low-class labor that your population can no longer afford to live doing, and you try to act like everything is fine.
That sounds familiar too.
Right, right. It does.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And we are an aging population as well. The baby boomers, I mean, our population of baby boomers is bigger than some countries' whole population.
Right.
So you think about who's going to pay for them.
Now
you start to see how immigrants make sense.
Well, you know, immigrants made up our country. They will be making up a lot of the countries over in Europe. And, you know, I wouldn't doubt if that population boom doesn't start going towards the Asian, Indonesian countries.
We have a low birth rate, and Europe does as well, and that hurts the country going forward. And then the ironic part of all of this is, look up the countries where most of these people are coming from. They are the mother countries of former colonies, the colonies that they've been raping and pillaging for the last 200 years and raising the living standards of their own citizens. Well, guess what? You keep telling them that the motherland is so great, they're going to want to come there.
They're coming back.
Yeah.
If they can't come to us, we'll come to them.
Yeah, so, you know. I mean, these are really complicated topics, man. And you guys are bringing up Mercer and Farage and Boris Johnson and all those other continents. But, you know, populism is on the rise across the globe.
Hey,
people want independence. Naj, I got most of my information from NPR. And Carol Cadwalladr was the investigative journalist who started looking into all these connections through, you know, the Facebook, Cambridge Analytica. It wasn't just that. There was all kinds of things. With that, we have another caller, Albert. Good evening, Albert. Thank you for joining us, Albert. We're on the topic of the EU tonight. What's on your mind?
Hey, Albert.
Just call to support.
Up, Albert?
Not much, just surviving, you know. I've been really busy doing stuff. I just wanted to call it because, you know, I'm a big supporter of your show. I want you to be doing great. Lots of people talking, that's great. But it's always good to hear opinions.
Hey, Albert, your picture's on the marquee on YouTube, Flying Charm. You're not only a supporter, you're a co-host.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
We were talking about something pretty hairy and technical. I was going to segue into R. Kelly's 20-minute video song today about explaining all the grief he's had over a number of years. I guess I didn't listen to it, right? I can't really bring it. Wait, I can't bring it up tonight because I didn't listen to it. I just heard highlights on the news that he didn't really apologize for sleeping with underage women, but he said he was sexually abused as a child, and it was probably a counterintuitive to the Me Too movement because he wanted to display. And certain people have been dissing him on social media and stuff. I heard that who's the one who was the famous singer, John Legend, or he was one of the people who said to boycott R. Kelly.
Hmm.
Did anyone listen to R. Kelly's 20-minute song that just came out? Just wondering.
No.
I don't think there's a person alive or dead who I would listen to a 20-minute song of. Like,
well, maybe we can save that for next week.
Had to be passed out.
But,
listen to a 20-minute song.
That's a long song.
You know what? I have sympathy for the guy. That song, I Believe I Can Fly, was one of my all-time favorite songs.
I mean, he was really talented, but megalomaniacs always make themselves the victim at some point. So somehow now R. Kelly makes himself the victim after all these years.
Just because he wrote
that
song.
Yeah, I'd have to listen to the song to get the dirt on it.
He's had several songs that have said that he had 14-year-old girls and he liked it. So it's not this is not something. His non-acknowledgement of his actions is nothing new. He's not keeping it secret, and you know, if you don't mind pedophilia, then go for it. You can just sympathize with them all.
He basically said that they all went after him, and
absolutely,
he didn't bring it on himself.
That's why I moved. That's why I say I moved from Hollywood. I moved from L.A. You know, I'm up there, and you have you got all these young girls that are coming to you, and they're looking for you to pull them out of wherever. Their parents are coming. You got moms and dads that tell the little girls to dress up in all this, you know, short dresses and makeup and high heels and go out there and get them a man and get the money any way they can. And I mean, take them to parties.
Are you trying to say you were a sex symbol, Don?
Oh, I know I am. But the bottom line is that that's why I moved from
L.A.
L.A.
to Reno.
Yep, it was getting too crazy for me because I was in the middle of it. And all of these things, like I've said many times, wait till the women are castigated from Hollywood. There are a lot of women who do the same thing that Weinberg and all those other guys did. And they haven't been outed yet. So, you know, that when that finally happens, then you'll see just how Hollywood was run. But, you know, we'll be...
You know, when I lived there the first time, Don, from 87 to 91, two of my male friends dropped dead from AIDS. Like, they died within 6 months of getting it, but one died of a stroke in a hospital after a Gucci party.
What?
Like, he probably didn't even know he had it.
No. That's why I left. That was the reason. I was in the middle, trying to tell you, I was in the middle of that Hollywood scene. I was writing screenplays for a hobby, working at the LA Times with you. And I was writing screenplays, so I was getting to know those people pretty well. And the reason, in a way, luckily, I got them stolen. I got one, you know, put on Movie of the Week. I didn't copyright it properly, and so it was a Movie of the Week. And it pulled me away from the industry because I was so mad and distrusting of everybody in Hollywood, Burbank. In Malibu, where I was hanging out. I lived on Venice Beach, so you know, Venice and all those places. And luckily, I pulled out of there because I was, you know, if it wasn't a Planned Parenthood, I was making babies all over the place. So it might have been a blessing in disguise. That I got my plays stolen because it got me away from that part of the industry. I still, now don't get me wrong, I still had a situation, but it could have been much, much worse. So that's one of the reasons.
Step one, your life became unmanageable.
Pretty much. I mean, there were a lot of things that were going on in Southern California in the late 70s throughout the 80s, a lot. And seeing your friends and coworkers come to work with all these lesions on their face and rashes and everything else, and you kind of know because you heard through the grapevine what it might be, then you get to learn a little bit more over time about what is going on, what's happening to a lot of these people, and you find out that this is something that we don't know about, a disease, and the only way that you can get it is... And we didn't at first even know it was blood-borne. We thought it was
fluid born, and so the homosexual, the gays, they were the first one hit. But then one of the communities that I was sort of I was dealing with a lot of those communities, not the gay community, but well, it's all intertwined. Let me put it like that. And so the intravenous drug community, they didn't know that it was there, and so that it exacerbated the problem. But you see these people going through, and then all of a sudden they're dead. You're like, what in the world? This dude is 20-something years old, you know, and then, you know, 32 years old, and all these people are dying. And it was a trip. It woke me up. And I started becoming a lot more responsible. But that AIDS thing really kicked my ass. It woke me up a lot.
Okay.
Anyone else care to comment?
Yeah, I believe it.
No, it was something. I've been through a lot in my lifetime. I've lived a long, 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 long life. And in terms, I've left out a couple longs there. But the AIDS epidemic coming down in more or less my neighborhood was one of the biggest fights or one of the biggest situations that I've ever seen, and it was destructive. You know, I've seen the crack epidemic, what it's done to neighborhoods, and the AIDS epidemic was even larger than the crack epidemic and the heroin epidemic in the early 60s. And a lot of the other epidemics that have come down the pike, I've been very, very lucky to skirt those epidemics. And it was only because I, of athletics, more or less, I was in the middle of a lot of those things, but I still kept my body in good shape. And let me mention, don't eat anything from a package, a bottle, or a can. Everything that you intake is going to come from the butcher block, from the produce aisle, and, you know, your milk and stuff, you can do that in a bottle, but that's about it. And so, you know, for the most part, that's how I was able to survive and how I made it 63 years and still going strong. It's amazing what you can do at 63 and 83 when you take care of your body.
Yeah, I just wanted to say one more thing. I was a little naive because one of my friends who died suddenly of HIV/AIDS was a church member. It's not like he was out running the streets. But apparently he was gay. And then I had another friend from the American Red Cross, the Los Angeles chapter, who was married, living a double life, bisexually, and he just dropped dead within a four-month period. And he was only in his late 20s. Only in his late 20s, clean cut. He had headshots to be an actor, but he was also a poet, and you would have just never guessed his life was in trouble.
Yeah, no, that's still to the kind, when you're a poet and an actor, you were in the AIDS community. But
he was also married, living a double life and lying about it.
Does not matter. So was I. But the bottom line is that you were wrong about your church-growing friend because you said running the streets. That's how I can almost guarantee 95% of the reason that he got it. He wasn't.
He wasn't running the streets. The one at the Red Cross was running the streets.
Their church boy was running the streets. That's how he got it. Guaranteed. He got it from multiple men contact, and it was in because the women weren't getting it at that time. It was very, very difficult because scientifically, according to doctors, because the vaginal walls are so thick that it takes so much more longer.
Well, ironically, I was working at the Red Cross from March 89 to August 91, where they, be quiet, 1989 to 91, when they had the public crisis of taking tampered blood. The Red Cross took in some tampered blood that they didn't test. And I was there when they were trying to downplay that publicity crisis. It was pretty real, that whole situation.
Wow. Arthur Ashe, you know, there are a lot of people who died from blood transfusions.
Yeah, I didn't start donating plasma until 2012. Did you guys ever donate blood before between 85 and 2005?
Once.
I couldn't. I was ineligible.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michael Jackson said that song Gone Too Soon for that kid who died of HIV.
Oh. I knew
Ryan.
A guy who, his brother-in-law Ryan. Was shot and survived and then got a blood transfusion, died of AIDS.
Yep. You talked about Ryan. Ryan, what was his last name? Ryan,
I can't remember.
Anyway, we just had another Ryan run here in Reno. So.
Well, John Yoder's roommate Slick dated one of my friends, Barbara, who ended up dying of HIV/AIDS. But she didn't tell anybody even before she went into a coma, she didn't tell anyone why she died. I found out later through someone who wasn't supposed to say it.
Right. Well, the AIDS crisis, after a while, hit every community. And right now, it's hitting the female community most. Minority females are hitting all-time highs in transmission rates. And it's
actually Panama, the country of Panama had an outbreak of some sort. And they have that community isolated from the rest of the country because it got to be so bad. And some of them didn't get diagnosed. They couldn't be helped because they were diagnosed too late at the stage of the illness.
Well, that's just reported that South Africa has its 12th year in a row of declining AIDS deaths. So we're looking at the fact that it's being tackled in an area that it was, you talk about it, an epidemic, everybody was getting AIDS in South Africa and Central Africa.
Most countries are declining substantially.
Yeah, the drugs are much better. The drugs are better and they're cheaper.
Yes. Naj or Albert, did you want to weigh in? Because we are going to end the show in 10 or 15 minutes.
I'm good.
Oh, no, I didn't
want to weigh in. Albert, thank you for calling. I was going to call you today, but then I had to run 3 extra errands. I was on vacation last week with my sister. But I didn't go to California yet, Albert. I will look you up when I go. I'm planning to go see Don and his wife first.
Gotcha.
By the way, Wade Hall, Chicago these days, is it hot there?
Yeah, it's gotten a lot warm, but it's not nearly as uncomfortable as when it was cold. So I'm not minding the warmth.
But you're not used to
cold
humidity.
Cold is painful. Cold hurts.
What's you're that? Not used to humidity. You're not used to the Midwest humidity, though.
No, but, you know, we used to, we've taken a few visits to Florida when it was warm, and so I felt humidity. I don't mind it too much.
Have you been working a lot?
Yeah, this month they've been keeping me pretty busy.
Okay,
I guess
just
it's a big travel time.
I'm going to Milwaukee also soon, but Don, you're first on the tall boy order. I'm coming to see you and Pat August 5th through the 10th.
All right, come on down.
Nice.
I know you'll be walking all day, but I can find something to do as long as I don't go near casinos.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Pat's going to drag me to some more Democratic conferences.
We just came back from the NACT convention in San Antonio, and I sent you pictures. Bill Clinton, Willie Brown was our honoree, and we had a very it was an educational time, but it was also a good time of this particular convention of redoing relationships, because we all know as African Americans, as blacks, that the war is getting worse or coming back on us. We used to, we thought that things were improving. For a while they were, and now we've got, ever since Mitch McConnell said that we will not work with his president, the shit's hit the fan. All the rednecks are coming out, the little dick white boys, and they're just really determined to make a last stand. In a way, this is Custer's last stand. It will be a huge either benefit or burden, depending on which side of the fence you're looking at, if Trump can make it these 4 years. And if he does, he could possibly be an eight-year president. So in the event that happens, then the right will have an extremely solid foundation for potentially decades to come. But when that fall comes, probably in the 2040s, 2050s, it's going to be ugly. Watch out. Civil war. We're going to have fights about everything from private property to water, even trying to build air.
I heard there was some big shot who predicted a civil war was going to break out by the 4th of July. It was some radio pundit or something. Yeah,
that's
well,
fine.
It didn't happen.
Nice things are recorded.
Yeah, but
I'm going to have John and Albert close the show out because I just realized I have to get all the med exchange ready for the next month, and I'm at work. So guys can finish out the show. I'm not hanging up. I'm just putting myself on mute. So thanks for joining us tonight. Wade, Albert, and Don, just close out the show for me. Thanks. Good night.
Sure.
All right.
Night.
You got it. And, Wade, we can do our conclusions now. I've got a real long week in San Antonio and just got back, so I'm kind of dying here, in fact. But if there's something Wade or Albert Wade, Albert, Naj, if you guys want to say something, go ahead.
I'm good. All right, just
Naj dropped.
Okay.
Oh, he's out. Okay. Brexit, just as far as that goes, I don't know. You know, I do have concerns that we're making government too global, and I think government should be something in your neighborhood, not big. And I think, you know, smaller government gives individuals more choices. I think most decisions should be made inside someone's mind, not with a handful of people and behind desks. So we don't know what's going to happen with Brexit. We can't predict the future, but give people freedom and just see what they can do. and you know, just give people a chance. Take away the red tape and see what they come up with. That's my feeling.
Yeah, you know, that humanitarian position is a position that I always take when I'm lobbying, and I'm a citizen lobbyist unpaid, so I get a chance to go down, and I'm always lobbying on the side of the citizen, just the regular person, and people as human beings. So that's, you know, that I agree with your position.
Awesome.
Adults, but I do. So cool. Thanks. And Albert, you didn't want to say anything?
No, I'm good.
Okay, man. Good to hear from you. You know, hope everything is going well. One of the main things that I'm always saying is please, 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 people get involved, because your lives are on the line. And, you know, when I say your lives are on the line, what's happening is that we're dying. People, you know, the world and people are dying. And they can make a difference. Anybody can make a difference. You know, even if you go out and help distribute food and holidays. But keep vigilant on your legislature, the laws, keep up with the insurance companies, because they're ripping you off left and right. You know, all these businesses, you've got AT&T and Wells Fargo and Barclays, and all these guys are slamming people by putting on extra interest rates, extra fees. These are things that are taking away from everyone's livelihood and can be rectified with a, you know, 5-minute phone call, except for the fact that you have to be put on hold for 15. But the thing is that everybody needs to stay vigilant of their lives, or else they're giving it away to the, what we were talking about earlier, the rich people. We're giving it away to the Rockefellers and everybody else who's involved in virtually anything that has to do with finance. And that's your money, you made it, and they're taking it penny by penny, but they can take it dime by dime and a dollar by dollar. So everybody needs to, I think, make sure that they take care of their own lifestyle, their own lives, and their own money. That's pretty much what I have to say.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, and so I don't hear her coming back, so in behalf of Jane Hoffman, she doesn't want to be called Jihad Jane anymore, but Jane Hoffman and everybody else, John, Ben, you guys have fun. We'll talk to you guys later.
All right, we can just hang up then and end the show.
You bet.
All right. Yep. See you guys. Take care. Bye.
All right, Wade. See you later. Bye, Albert.
Yeah, bye.